From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
When it comes to investing in our kids, I think we should put a high number out there and figure out how we're going to get to that number so they can educate our children. I can guarantee you, if there was a need for more money for the corrections department, I don't think we'd be having this debate. We would figure out how to get to that number.
We're now at $11,408,000,000 and climbing, and the day has just begun.
So a vote for this budget is also a vote for a tax increase. Now, if we're going to do that tax increase, let's be honest about it. Let's vote for it today. Let's see if they've got the votes up for it, and let's do it.
And so far this afternoon, we have methodically, if not incorrectly, spent $21,511,000,000 plus.
Doesn't your appropriation bill here assume the tax increase is permanent and not temporary?
No.
How is it that we're going to pay for it then, sir?
My job is just to get this bill out of the floor and pass it. I'm not going to tell you how we're going to pay for it just yet.
You know what your plan is? Your plan is to not have a plan. Your plan is to criticize us. Your plan is to say, okay, we should have this low spending authority. It would decimate our schools. Higher education would be decimated. What will we do when we close 10 prisons? That's your plan. It's the wrong plan for Illinois. We're moving forward.
And those are the sounds from the Illinois House this week as the House approves 73 budget bills in a day without a mechanism to pay for it. Also, a judge puts the state's new pension law on hold. Those are among the topics we'll chat about on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Venicky, WUIS and Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau Chief, Brian Mackey, WUIS and IPR State House Reporter, and our guest, Kurt Erickson of Lee Enterprises, which includes newspapers in Bloomington, Decatur, Carbondale, and the Quad Cities. Kurt, welcome to the show this week.
Good to be here.
And we spent a full day at the Capitol on Thursday, I guess it was, when Illinois lawmakers in the Illinois House voted on approving the state budget and yet didn't have a way to pay for it. Guys at the State House, give us kind of a briefing on what was taking place, and we'll go from there.
So the House spent, I believe it was 9 hours, 33 minutes, and 13 seconds, if our audio recording is correct, debating the state budget and particularly the spending portion of it, 73 separate bills that basically, an easy way to term it, would be ranging about $38 billion, so equivalent to pretty much what Governor Pat Quinn had wanted in the budget. It boosts funding, for example, as Quinn had wanted, the monetary award program. It does give education a slight increase, though not much, some additional spending for prisons, but again, not massive bumps. Nonetheless, this comes at a time when the House and Senate had passed a revenue projection that was about $34.5 billion or what have you. And therefore, obviously, a big gap, a gap of billions of dollars. And that's what much of the debate was about. Democrats justifying all of these particular spending measures, while Republicans were saying, hey, we don't have the money to pay for any of this. And as we heard in the opening there, Representative Dwight Kay had just kept a running tally all throughout where they were both met that cap that, again, the General Assembly had set with Democratic votes and then surpassed it.
So we are a few billion dollars difference between what we've approved on the House floor and what kind of money we really have. What's that mean? Why are they doing this?
So what the Republicans will tell you is that what this means is that the Democrats do eventually plan to vote to raise
the income tax or make the tax increase from 2011 permanent, depending on how you look at that. Basically, the tax was raised from 3% to 5% individual income tax at that time, and it was scheduled to begin sunsetting this year. It was going to drop down at the end of this year to 3.75%. That is what left that huge hole in the revenue picture that they were anticipating, and Democrats have said, the leaders have said, Governor Pat Quinn, Speaker Madigan, and Senate President John Cullerton have said that they want to extend that tax increase, make it permanent, yet they are seem to be having a hard time rounding up enough votes for that in the Illinois House. And so what some of the expressions we heard is you're putting the cart before the horse, or the cart before the donkey was one quip we heard on the floor that says that you're voting to spend all the money for next year, but you haven't actually voted to raise the revenue yet. And the Republicans are saying you ought to be honest about it. I think we even heard Democrat Jack Frank say, be honest about it and vote for the tax today as well.
There are political ramifications for the entire day from the Republican aspect. House Speaker Madigan could say, candidate X voted against more money for schools. On the Democratic side, there were some targets that voted for it, for the spending, but say that they won't vote for the tax increase or tax extension. So there are all sorts of, you know, political undertones to yesterday's action.
Are there major cuts in this budget, by the way?
No.
I mean, there are cuts here and there, yeah, to particular programs, things that maybe a legislator doesn't like. One that has gotten some attention is the Illinois Math and Science Academy, for example, seeing their state funding reduced because legislators were upset that there aren't enough Latino and African-American children who've been accepted at that school. So, yes, there are cuts here and there. But by and large, there are increases and, again,
and
not major ones, but a lot of and level funding, and it does include the full pension payment.
I stepped on Charlie as he was going to continue talking there about the political ramifications. So
but basically what I was going to say is that this is like act one of a multi-part drama. I would not be at all surprised to see these very same bills someday next week come up and have amendments proposed to all of them that would cut the spending level down to the not recommended budget that the governor put out, and have the sponsors of the amendments, who would probably be some of the targeted Democrats, say, well, we're going to cut this back because we're not going to vote for the tax increase, and challenge the Republicans to vote to make these dramatic cuts, and the amendments will be structured to be the most heinous imaginable, and then have the roll calls to go out in the campaign season and say, Representative so-and-so, your Republican member of the House, voted to, you know, throw widows out in the street, voted to kill poor children, all the over-the-top rhetoric that is so typical these days in campaigns. And then finally, at the end of the day, we'll sit down and we'll work something out.
And we've certainly seen that before, Charlie. Last year with the pension issue, mm-hmm. with some of the concealed carry issues, mm-hmm. Speaker Madigan ran a bunch of bills. I seem to remember that one of them got one yes vote, I think. Maybe the Speaker was the only one to vote for his own thing, just to try and get people on the record. Now, the Republicans kind of cottoned on to what was happening and didn't, you know, they just sort of protested. But, you know, it's still a recorded vote, and it's still certainly fair game for a political mailer. But I don't think we've mentioned yet that after this big, long day of all these 73 budget bills, more than 9.5 hours of debating, the Speaker had placed motions to reconsider. So this is it's a parliamentary rule of the House where the person who sponsors the bill can say, you know what, I move that we reconsider the vote. So they're not actually going through the next step in the, you know, the,
yeah,
the
and
how the bill becomes a law and going over to the Senate.
That's probably what I should have mentioned when I started talking about next week. Madigan held these bills so they can come up next week and have those amendments proposed.
Or,
had he not filed that motion, the bills would have been out of the control of the House and en route to the Senate. And anybody who votes yes on a bill can file a motion to have that vote reconsidered.
Or somebody else speculated, and you guys comment whether you think this is baloney or not, that he put that hold on it. So and says, Senate, you need to pass the tax increase first.
No, I don't think that'd be the case.
I think that this is part of, we talk about the political dynamics at play, and there's plenty that is campaign fodder, but it's also the internal political dynamics that are at play. So less perhaps that this is trying to force the hand of a Senate for a tax vote, because I think that the Senate president has said, no, we want the House to go first because it's a tougher vote there. And I think that Madigan knows that as well. The issue being less about the tax increase. Pardon?
So he just will play nice and go along with that?
I'm not necessarily saying that he'll play nice and go along with it. And that's exactly why, again, they may be held so that the Senate isn't changing the spending portions.
Well, in that regard, it's less about the
tax vote and more about where money that Illinois is going to spend is where it's going to go, and senators getting their say on that. So there's a lot of the internal political dynamics are still working up the votes, yes, in both chambers, though particularly in the House, it seems, because there are fewer Democrats and there are more contested races. So it's convincing everybody to go along with both portions.
I think this is still an internal House Democratic battle. The Senate can pass both the budget and the tax extension without Republican help.
Republicans,
and yeah, and they will. And Republicans in the House are not going to participate. So Madigan's got to figure this out within his own caucus. And Quinn's got to be part of that too, so you know it's still evolving in the House side.
So it's more exclusive to that chamber only, in your view.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I don't think you can underplay the battle between the Senate and the House. We've had situations in the past where it comes down to the very last day of session, the House passes a budget in the afternoon and then leaves town, literally, so that the Senate, because of the way bills work, the only thing the Senate can really do is say yes or no to what the House basically shoved down their throats. And there are a lot of senators who wanted to, that particular year, I think this was 2 years ago, they wanted to increase education spending, for example, but they couldn't do it because the House had left town. And so if you're going to pass the budget by the vote threshold needed by the deadline, then they just had to accept what the House gave them. The Senate has been pretty careful this year to not send, parliamentarily set things up so that the House can't really put them in that position yet, at least.
Yeah.
And the Speaker, by withholding, keeping those bills back in the House, he made sure that the Senate can't do that to him either.
I think that the House-Senate dynamic storyline is maybe next week's topic. We're not there yet.
Well, with any budget year, you have to have different crises and explosions before things settle down. You would assume you wouldn't have too many under same party control, but it is Illinois. Kurt, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, but you have this, the thing I think we need to emphasize here is that the problem is the tax increase is set to roll back. A lot of the Democratic leaders want to make it permanent, but they don't have their members on board to do that yet in the House, at least.
And they have a lot of their members that have said, no, we want it rolled back, that can either campaign on it or filled out. When you're running for office, you turn in these questionnaires. And so they're on the record saying they want it repealed or want it to go away. And so that makes it particularly difficult for them to go back on a promise.
And there's this House bill that was filed very early back in 2013. And it has a bunch of freshman members and a couple other members on it that say, we think the tax rate should not only sunset, we think it should go all the way back to 3%. And so it's going to be, so those are some of the people that you might think would be Democrats. You could twist arms and maybe promise a project in their district or something to get them to go along with this tax increase. But now they're on record saying that they oppose it, and it would be a big political problem for them to flip on that.
And for those political observers that say, they'll wait until fall to take up the tax issue, how realistic is that point of view right now?
That would be fascinating to watch if that's the case, because we'd go through an entire summer and campaign season with a constitutional crisis hanging over our heads and the governor feeling forced to potentially file paperwork to shut down, 11 prisons or whatever. But there are still a lot of people who think that that could happen, and that the House would just leave town and say, we'll figure that out after the election.
Both because it's such a difficult vote in the House, and also one must keep in mind that we heard in the opening there Representative Jay Hoffman saying, hey, Republicans, where's your plan? But one Republican who really hasn't come out with a plan is the party's candidate for governor, Bruce Rauner, who has said that he'll introduce something comprehensive, but he has maintained that Illinois can roll back the tax rate to that 3% level. He hasn't said how. He hasn't said anything about how it's going to happen, but he is supposedly going to be able to fund education and without any cutbacks. He's also thrown, you know, stones at Governor Pat Quinn for cuts that have occurred under the Quinn administration's tenure to schools. So that's all at play. And the governor, again, threatening these cuts, there's, you know, some that would say, as Kurt said, it's dangerous, and it would be frightening for schools, for so many entities, to not know what their budget is going to do and to have all of that uncertainty in terms of a state commitment over their heads. It would also be bad for Quinn because it would make him feed into the notion that he's an ineffective leader. He would be able, perhaps, to draw out that, hey, you elect this guy. These are the sort of cuts that are going to happen. This isn't what I want to happen to you, schools. I'm fighting for you.
It could be a referendum on between Quinn and Rauner on supporting extension of the tax, income tax, or giant, drastic, awful cuts if you vote for Rauner.
And you understand Democrats are, you know, they're on the record now saying that they will favor this politically unpopular position of raising taxes. And I think that there's a reluctance to kind of do the dirty work, raise taxes, and then Bruce Rauner gets to come in and preside over a relatively more stable financial environment. I think there's some saying, you know, some thinking if they can find a way to legally and constitutionally do it, which is a big question, to say, you know what, if Bruce Rauner thinks he can make Illinois government work by letting the tax increase roll back, let's let him figure it out, you know, on day one when he's sworn in, if, you know, if he's elected.
You're listening to State Week. Coming up, the Illinois pension law put on hold.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, Brian Mackey, and Lee Enterprises' Kurt Erickson. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Amanda Venicky, a judge has said stop, and we will wait until a court decides on the constitutionality of the Illinois pension reforms. So tell us about that.
So you had a coalition of attorneys. It was actually really interesting to watch because you had two lawyers for assistant attorneys general on the one side defending the pension law and its beginning to take effect in June 1st. And then on the other side, 10 attorneys. They had to have extra chairs pulled up around kind of the bench where lawyers sit at the front of a room for a hearing that were all there to advocate putting it on hold. They say that it's just too much uncertainty, too much confusion that had followed initially, actually, a filing had been put out by the State University Annuitants Association, who said that their situation was particularly egregious for individuals working at universities because of differences in the state university's retirement system than the others that were causing basically a lot of those professors and such who were eligible for retirement to flee because they were going to be faced with drastic cuts to their pensions if they weren't staying, things involving both a typo in the pension law as well as some other changes called, you know, a refund and what have you. So they had actually gotten an agreement with the Attorney General's office as sort of a backup plan. Instead, the Sangamon County Circuit Court Judge John Bell said that it was so much confusion. He took that argument and took it to the next level. So much confusion across the board, not just with university employees and not just with those ready for retirement, but those already retired who don't know what their standard of living is going to be, for those that are making decisions about what they want to do in terms of working for the state or not, that he just put a hold on the entire thing until, Bill, as you said, the constitutionality of the law is determined, and who knows how long that will take. Judge Bells will be deciding that, and of course, if the stay will ostensibly remain until then, and universities hope that that will obviate the need for all of these retirements, and people will go on, but the overall constitutionality, is this law going to ever take effect, still remains.
And is it even any type of indicator? Obviously, supporters or the opponents, I should say, of this pension bill say are happy that there's been a delay. But is that any – and they look at that optimistically, but is that any indicator of how the courts will treat this?
I don't think it's any indicator. I think it just shows that it's a big deal, and they want to make sure they do it right. And in the meantime, you've got thousands of people's lives in the balance. So here's a legitimate way to kind of smooth things out during this transitional period.
And we did see also this week that the Attorney General has for the first time responded to the basic question of the constitutionality of the law. So those documents came out during that same very busy budget debate in the Illinois House. And basically you have Attorney General Lisa Madigan arguing that a lot of different points, but overall that it is constitutional for Illinois to have taken these steps because the pension situation had gotten so expensive for the state that it is the only way for Illinois to keep the retirement benefits that it had promised in any fashion and to uphold as well the rest of the state's duties budgetarily and financially.
Her answer really kind of mirrored the preamble of the proposed law by saying, you know, we're in an emergency and so we can kind of do whatever
we want.
Ignore
the Constitution.
Yes.
It occurs to me that that response was expected because, as you say, Kurt, it basically was lifted from the lengthy preamble to the bill in the first place. And I'll say what I've said before. I think if you're a justice of the Supreme Court, you look at the Constitution, you take the clear language pretty seriously. And then you look at this preamble that talks about how bad things are. It doesn't mention some of the other options that are out there, like amortizing the unfunded liability over a longer period, like perhaps changing our revenue structure so that we tax some of the things that all our neighboring states do to raise additional revenue. Violating the Constitution is not the only thing available. And as I say, if I were a justice, I'd say the Constitution is pretty important, and I'm not going to ignore the clear language of the Constitution just so you, the General Assembly, don't have to take some tough votes.
You know, and you're right, Charlie, and I've even asked Governor Quinn and some other leaders around here, you know, if you think the constitutional provision is outdated or you have a problem with, you know, with reducing the benefits and the court's going to rule, you know, as you're suggesting they might, Charlie, why not ask voters to change the Constitution, you know, just get rid of the pension protection clause in the Constitution, kind of put your money where your mouth is. But nobody really seems willing to go that far.
Well, and part of that is, I don't think that would solve the problem. I don't think you can retroactively go back and say all those benefits that you earned that were protected by the constitutional language, we've now amended the Constitution and you lose those protections retroactively. I don't think you can do that.
Well, you also have the contract question, which goes back
right
to common law. And, yeah, I mean, it's even deeper than the 1970 Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Just looking for a brief explanation to the next question. On Friday, an Illinois House committee approved putting an advisory referendum on the November ballot asking people about whether they support an increase in the minimum wage.
Yeah, this has been a big issue for Democrats across the country this year. We've heard President Barack Obama talk about it, certainly Governor Pat Quinn. They have, however, had a difficult time getting legislative support for raising the minimum wage here in Illinois. So what the House Speaker did this morning is pass legislation that would put a referendum on the fall ballot that would ask Illinois voters, shall the minimum wage in Illinois be raised to $10 an hour on January 1st, 2015? It's a simple yes or no, but it's non-binding. So the if, you know, assuming the Senate passes it and it gets does get on the ballot and the voters approve it, the Speaker has said he thought it would be a good indication of the way the voters would want to go. And that's that.
Noteworthy that supermajorities of Democrats have been unable to get this hike in the minimum wage through, number one. And number two, it's also widely believed that this is another initiative by the Speaker in what's expected to be a very tough election to drive up Democratic turnout.
And we'll do some notes from the field. We'll start with Brian Mackey.
You know, we've often heard the credit rating agencies in Illinois used to bludgeon people to try and get some of these austerity measures through, certainly the pension benefit reductions. We heard a lot about credit rating agencies lowering Illinois' ratings. And they were even came up in debate yesterday during the budget. But the credit rating agencies have actually weighed in. And, I mean, they don't really endorse specific budget plans, but they basically said that Illinois would be on a better structural alignment with Governor Pat Quinn's recommended budget, which does call for keeping the tax increase. So, again, they don't go as far as endorsing it, but we did hear last month that S&P seems to indicate that it would at least prefer, you know, probably the structural, the fiscal sanity that would come about, or I guess I should say the fiscal alignment that would come about with extending the tax increase.
Kurt Erickson.
Amidst all the doom and gloom of the budget talks, statistics came out this week that the unemployment rate in Illinois had dropped to 7.9%, which is the lowest amount in five-plus years. And at about the same time the numbers came over the internets, my daughter called and said she'd gotten a summer job. So things are looking up.
Amanda Vinicky.
Well, again, as all of the attention was on the budget, the General Assembly, of course, went about its business passing a whole bunch of other bills and legislation. Illinois, it seems, may be, or at least at this point, is poised to be the very first state that would regulate microbeads. So those of you who may have those little tiny balls that are supposed to help exfoliate with your face wash or help get your teeth whiter if they're in your toothpaste will eventually be banned in Illinois, at least according to a proposal that made it out of a House committee. The concern that these little baby beads are ending up in Illinois and all waterways everywhere, including in the Great Lakes, as well as in fish's stomachs, and that's toxic and bad for everyone.
And Charlie Wheeler, who probably doesn't use any of those products.
I had to stop and think, what the heck are, you know, I use regular soap, you know, bar of soap. But in any event, you know, all the focus on Senator Obama's seat when he was elected to the presidency, and Rod Blagojevich is in prison in part for trying to sell that Senate seat. Well, his Illinois Senate seat, or at least the chair, will be donated, not sold, to the Obama Presidential Library under legislation that the Senate approved without dissent. And I think Senator Cullerton made some comment, he was the sponsor, John Cullerton, the Senate president, to the effect that if we were to try to sell this, we might be in trouble. But on the other hand, since we're going to donate it or loan it to the Presidential Library, not just the chair that Senator Obama sat in the Illinois Senate, but other, what would you say, other materials and books and papers and things like that related to his stint as a state senator. Since we're going to loan these things, there should be no problem.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Kurt Erickson of Lee Enterprises for joining us today. Production assistance for our program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.